Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. My name is Cosmo and tonight I'm joined by Eddie.
Good evening.
As usual, like we've always got Eddie. No matter what happens, it's always me and Eddie.
Pumped out come rain or shine, come rain or shine.
And we also have Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Good evening.
Welcome back, I should say. The listeners, if you know, you know.
First appearance of the season.
Yeah.
First appearance of the season. We love to see it.
Can you remember the last time you were on?
I can't. I think it was on when we were hunting for a manager, and we were talking about the lists of the managers that we had, and I don't remember Postecoglou being in my list in any way, shape, or form. But how times have changed, and I'm sure we'll get into it a bit later on in more detail. But there's not a man I'd want to have instead.
Don't worry, there was many doubters. I think almost everyone was among them at one point. But it's fair to say everyone's come round. And also, shout out to Jed. He's not on the show, but he was the first person I knew that went all in on Ange Postecoglou. So he needs to get his flowers for that. I can't lie.
Absolutely, man.
But Aaron, as you mentioned, you know, you said maybe at first he wasn't on your list. And I have to say, this was the first game that I went to this season at the stadium. Yeah. And I think one of the things that really struck me was, even before the game, how good everyone's spirits were. For me, it's incomparable to sort of anything I remember, because I don't know what it was. I think it's because I was at uni. I kind of missed the peak of Pochettino at the old White Hart Lane. And then I feel like when we were at Wembley, obviously it just wasn't the same. No one liked going to Wembley, even though the results were good. And then I had a season ticket for the first season at the new stadium, which ended with, ironically enough, against Sheffield United with a 1-1 draw when Pochettino went. So it's fair to say, in recent years, with me going to Spurs much more often, I haven't seen the vibes as good as they were. But as literally, Aaron, I don't know what you thought, because you went to the game as well.
Yeah.
It's a completely different experience going to Spurs at the moment, with how good everyone's feeling about Ange.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time as a Spurs fan that I genuinely went into some games with a little bit of confidence. In the past, it's been more blind hope and then relief. But I genuinely felt the entire way through the game, even when we were 1-0 down, up until the scoreboard, board for the additional minutes went up in the second half, that we were going to win. And that comes from the culture that Postecoglou has been able to install in such a short amount of time. And when you compare him to, like, some of the other managers, that even the Ten Hags of the world that have been in jobs longer, they haven't been able to instill this kind of culture. And he's only been in there for a couple of months. I think what he's done is such an impressive job. Obviously, we do need to, in terms of results, I think we've done, obviously, you can't ask for too much more from where we are in the league, but most of the results you would hope that we would be getting. And I think, obviously, we'll come on to the North London derby a bit later on, but he's ticking all the boxes at the moment. We will have bigger tests. We're obviously only a couple of games in, but very, very happy. And you got that feeling around the ground as well. Just, it was almost like at times, even before kickoff, like a party atmosphere.
Like, that's what I thought. Yeah, so true.
People were just so upbeat, and it was bizarre to see. The atmosphere did change quite significantly with some of the refereeing and the officiating that was going on. And again, we will come on to that later on. But I and the people around me, we believed, like, that we would get back into the game, especially when the additional, was it the 12 or 13 minutes went up? Like, we had belief, like firm belief, rather than just blind hope, which I think says a lot about what he's been able to do. Big Ange, that is.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to, because I've heard a lot of people and a lot of podcasts say, like, oh, like the whole way through, like, they were confident that we were going to get that result. I don't know if I'm going to be honest, I didn't. I don't know if it is. By the way, I took Glenn's, for context, Glenn, I think he's on holiday for his birthday. I'm not sure where Glenn actually is at the moment. His whereabouts are kind of unbeknownst to us. But
I think he's in York.
He's in York celebrating his birthday. But so I got the ticket off Glenn, and Glenn kind of sits a little bit in the posh seats, I got to say, in the West Stand. And the atmosphere, I was sort of putting a few like jealous looks across to the South Stand, because basically songs don't get sung there. It's sort of like in the West Stand, it's like if you start trying to like join in with a song, it's kind of like a few tuts around you. It's that kind of vibe. So I don't know if that sort of like affected how I was feeling a little bit. And also I brought my girlfriend along to the game, which probably did affect how I processed the game a little bit, because I was kind of like, oh shit, like we've been absolutely flying. I've been telling her how good Spurs are this season. I've taken her to this and we've got done by Gustavo Harmer goal in the 75th minute. I've seen this so many times before. And like you say, though, when the 12 minutes went up, I think there was like a big rally. That must be said. But Eddie, watching it at home, I assume you weren't doing one of your streaming on your holiday jaunts. How was that? How did you have the same feeling as Aaron, or were you a bit more, I guess, sort of like deflated at the goal like I was?
I think that the goal was gutting, like the feeling of it going in. You know, like when you score those, like when it comes off the post, it's bare satisfying. And when it goes against you, it's bare gutted. Like,
yeah.
Just hearing that and then seeing it go in. And I thought it was frustrating, because I thought that we played well. We dominated the game in terms of possession and chances, without really testing Fodderingham that much. I mean, he hardly gave us any time to test him, but that's another thing. But for the amount of shots that we had, I think it ended up being something like 22 or even maybe 20, more than that.
I think it might have been 25.
Yeah, something like that. And with the amount of attempts that we had on goal, it never felt like we were like, oh my God, that was the chance that we missed. So like two or three amazing chances. And I thought that whilst it was positive, it felt like one of those where like, okay, this is going to be a steep learning curve for us in terms of we need to be able to put chances away, because we are creating them, but there's no point creating them if we're not going to score them. And it also felt like, okay, maybe Ange got it wrong by starting Son against a team like Sheffield, because I thought that a lot of the time where we had our wingers really holding the whip, probably some of the better performances in terms of holding the whip that we've had this season, both Kulusevski and Solomon were putting in decent balls into the box, but we just didn't have any aerial presence. And that significantly changed when Richarlison came on the pitch. And I thought that, okay, he got a goal from a header. What I was thinking was, did Ange make the right decision in playing someone like Son up front against Sheffield? But yeah, I always felt that it was a case of us continuing to play our football. That's what it felt like. Unlike when we went down under Conte, Mourinho, even Poch, felt when we got to the 75th minute, 85th minute, those games started to feel increasingly desperate. And this was very different to, let's say, the Leicester game. Very similar in terms of like last minute winners. In fact, we beat our own records on the weekend with the latest winner. So that was nice. But it felt a lot less desperate than that. It felt a lot less desperate than even Bournemouth last season, when Bentancourt got the winner. I think it was Bentancourt. It was so, like, the difference between that and this was that even the second goal was just peak angst. But our fullback was pressing high up the pitch in that kind of left centre mid position, wins the ball. Our winger combines with a striker, who then combines with the other winger coming in on the inside. Sorry, it wasn't even a winger because Kulusevski was playing in that central role that we talked about. And again, it was just a case of us playing our football. Even Deki said when he was in that position, all he had to do was remain calm. And I think someone like, I don't know, Bergwijn or Lucas, they snatch at that. What Kulusevski did was such a epitomisation of the difference in football that we're seeing under Ange. And I think I don't want to like just give Ange all the praise for that. I think the players have made significant changes to their mentality in order to continue to play like that, considering you have pretty much, I mean, the players that ended on the pitch were pretty much the players that we had last season, because there's no Van de Ven on the pitch, there was no Sar on the pitch, there was no Porro on the pitch at the time of the goal, at least. There was no Son on the pitch.
Yeah, I think just Johnson.
Exactly. And if you think about it in that sense, the players that actually got the winner were the players that were absolutely abject for Conte. So I do also want to make a major shout out to the mental fortitude the players had to continue to their death.
I want to give a shout out to Ange as well, just for both the timing of the substitutions and the bravery of the substitutions as well, because I was getting frustrated up in my posh seat, and I was saying, like, why hasn't he made a sub? It was the first time I was kind of like getting a bit frustrated with Ange. I was just like, this is, for me anyway, it felt like it clearly wasn't working and we needed to change something to get a breakthrough. And then when he made the sub, I was a bit like, whoa, that's drastic. Like, you've basically changed the entire front three. Just a reminder, if you'd forgotten, it was Perisic for Solomon, Richarlison on for Sar, with Kulusevski then dropping into the midfield, and Brennan Johnson on for Son. And I was like, are we not going to lose like a lot of fluidity from changing the whole front three? It was just a masterstroke in the way that it changed it up, because Sheffield United couldn't really deal with the change in the way that we approached the attack. All of a sudden, rather than Kulusevski on the right wing with his quite methodical style of play, you have this rapid winger who can get in behind in Johnson. Richarlison, like you said, Eddie's more of a target man. You can swing balls into him. And then Perisic, you got someone who's, say what you want about him, but he can deliver an incredible cross.
And go either way.
Yeah, and those were the guys that completely changed the game. And I think it's just like, again, we keep saying it, but it's just like it's night and day between him and Conte, because he empowers this squad to kind of like take responsibility, and you can tell he trusts them. We're seeing completely different versions of these players compared to last season, especially Perisic. I did hear something about Perisic potentially being surplus to requirements and falling out. I don't know whether it was with Ange, but apparently we were looking to get rid of him in January. So I was sort of surprised to see him come on. But in the end, he's been the game winner for us. Like, Aaron, I don't know about you, but for me, in a way, like, that equaliser was sort of more exhilarating than the winner, in a way, just because the way it went in live, Perisic just whipped it in with so much pace, and to see it just like smash off Richarlison's head and into the net, I was like, wow, what a fucking goal that was. Like, it's incredible to see.
I'm sat quite near the corner flag, and it's just one of them ones, like, you knew it was going in a good, like, as soon as he hit it and it left his boot and it was travelling, you're like, it's begging for someone to touch it home. And it was amazing to see from the angle that I did. And I thought it was very, very telling, and it showed the mentality as well, that it was like, get the ball. Like, Richarlison, who's had obviously quite a difficult time recently, he could have really, really milked some of that celebration, but he was ball, or someone got the ball and we were back in it again. But just going back to the substitutions quickly, I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, but they were saying about how, because there's so much of this, so much additional time now, some managers are starting to make their subs a little bit later, anticipating almost that you're going to have those double-digit extra minutes of stoppage time rather than the twos, threes that have been we've become accustomed to. Just because those players that have been on the pitch, they're especially, it's irregular to change your centre halves, really. So they've got a lot of extra minutes in those legs, and making those changes a little bit later on just has a real different impact. And I think maybe that's something that Ange's done even on purpose, or it's just happened to go in our favour this time. But no, I think he did really, really well with his substitutions. Brennan Johnson isn't someone that you want to really come up against when you've been playing for nearly 90 minutes already, just because of that pace. And I actually think his goal that was ruled out was the one that I celebrated the most. Yeah. I think I actually felt it in my throat, like the noise that came out. It stayed in there for a while. I then stood there with my hands on my head, just like, I thought that was it. But there's a really, really good vibe about the team, and I really hope that this form continues.
The second disallowed goal, which I feel like has almost been lost to history, I haven't actually watched the highlights back, but I don't know why that was disallowed. The one where there was a supposed foul by Johnson in the build-up, I was really celebrating that, and I was in disbelief when I saw that it got called back, because it didn't look like a foul at all. Admittedly, I was far away, but I think it was quite funny, actually, because, yeah, obviously, it was my girlfriend's, like, first time going to Spurs, and, like, by the time we got the winner, she didn't even know whether to celebrate, because I think that was her first taste of VAR in the flesh, and she was, like, I think she was heartbroken from the first two being ruled out. But yeah, like, I don't know. Eddie, you watched it at home. That didn't look like a foul to me. And also, I want to get your tactical analysis, in the sense that, again, in the stadium, it's kind of hard to tell when you're not watching it on the TV. But was Højbjerg on at centre back and Perisic at left back? Like, what was going on there? That it just seemed like a mental formation.
So I think what happened in the end is, even I had to do a double take on the substitutions at the end of the game, because I was like, hold on, I'm pretty sure we only had one centre back on at the end of the game, which was obviously true. But I think with towards the end of the game, even before the 90 minutes, Sheffield were not getting out of their half, and they were making no attempts to either. So it didn't make any sense to have both centre halves and Bissouma on the pitch, because you're essentially just missing out on an extra man in midfield, because Sheffield are not pressing. They're not going to press you any way, like even close to even the halfway line. There were the ball pressure was only coming on when you're about 5 yards, 10 yards into their half. So it just made no sense to be building up with two centre backs. So yeah, I think what happened in the end was Højbjerg just ended up kind of being a bit of like a left centre mid, but like more like a left centre back in the sense that like you get like kind of midfielder sensibilities in that position, and obviously you have the defensive sensibilities of Romero there just for that little bit of stability. Also, in terms of like the formation, you did then get like extra creativity with Kulusevski being part of that midfield box, and Bissouma, Maddison, Johnson, you have all of these creative players in those positions, rather than having like a Saar, who, don't get me wrong, is creative in his own sense, but definitely a bit more of a dynamic kind of ball carrier rather than I'd say intricate passing or link up. And I think that the decision to do that was just because, look, much like Everton yesterday, by the time it got to like 85 minutes, Sheffield had no intention of playing football. Whether they had any intention of playing football for the whole of the second half is, I don't know, is potentially another different question. But it was just a case of them bringing on defenders, them trying to shut this game down, and us trying to unpick a very, very tight lock. Because you're not going to play through the middle, and there's just too many bodies in there. But what we were trying to do with Højbjerg as well, who, you know, whether or that's consistent or not, does definitely have a bit more like dynamism in terms of the range of passing than someone like Van de Ven. When you have that many bodies in the middle, especially when Ange's midfielders, wingers are asked to hold the width, much like you saw for the offside goal, Brendan Johnson, although it was Bissouma with an absolute harrier of a ball into Johnson's lap. When you have that kind of passing range from your centre, the halfway line, and the width of the wingers, and like Perisic and Johnson are going to hold that width all day, I think that's why Ange made those decisions to switch it then. And it proved really effective, to be honest, because you still had Udogi on the pitch, who gave you that bit of midfield muscle and dynamism. But obviously, like, again, I don't know if I can praise Udogi enough for being a 20-year-old coming into the team, never playing in the Premier League, obviously, having his breakthrough season really back end of two seasons ago and this season, not even playing for the first, like, he's only been capped at under 21 level for Italy, but he's a transformative signing for us. And when you have that, and when you have he's so secure on the ball, and when you have that kind of presence in there, you can afford to take off a centre back in these situations, because he's got recovery pace and he's very tactically astute, and he has the ability to carry the ball. We're starting to build a squad
that has so complete
profiles. Yeah. He's huge. I think he must look even bigger in real life. Like, he's an absolute specimen. And I think we are really, really starting to build a squad of profiles that Ange really likes. One injury and you got Ben Davis in there. And I think that's going to be the worry for like a lot of the positions currently. Mm. But if we can keep these players fit, and men, I mean, how, you know, actually, to be fair, we can say it now. In our Spurs supporting lifetime, or at least going to games, we've never had a season where we've had weeks to prepare from the start of the season. So that's going to, again, that's just going to play into our hands, I think, in terms of really, really coming to grips with this new star, because there's definitely room for improvement. I'm almost like, well, I don't, yeah, play through it. Just keep playing the way you want to play, and we'll see where we need to improve. But I'm happy just to see it play out on the pitch.
Yeah, one game a week with, you know, obviously you're starting 11, but then when Ange trusts the whole squad, you've got five subs that can come in, which is something we didn't see under Conte, because he would make at most, like, no, let's be honest, he would just bring Davinson Sanchez on for no reason. He loved doing that. But it's interesting you touch on that, Eddie. I don't want to come on to Arsenal just yet, but like, you know, I'm so in my Spurs bubble at the moment. Like, I just forget that there's Champions League football happening, and I see like, oh, United. I'm like, why are quotes coming out from Ten Hag's press conference and Arteta's press conference? Because they're doing a press conference after the game, so they've immediately got to go and play on a Tuesday or Wednesday. And Arsenal are playing, admittedly, they have a very easy group, but they're playing a massive Champions League, their first game back in the Champions League in like 10 years. On Wednesday, and we just got a whole week to just allow the boys to prepare. Another thing I wanted to say, Eddie, like, I think what you were saying about Udogi, it kind of relates to like what I was thinking about why Ange feels like, why this feels like such a fresh start, and why there's such a positive atmosphere. I think it's because we basically have a whole new team. There's one or two people who are still there from last season, but it's insane how this team just feels so fresh. And even the players that are from last season, like Romero, Bissouma, Son, you know, ever present. But
I don't even know if we're
they feel like different people.
Yeah, but like Basuma, sorry to cut you off, but Basuma, Sarr, he didn't play. Like they were, I don't know. It's just such a, for someone who's quite clearly got the history of Conte and he's won things, how we can misidentify the talent that was in our squad is like unforgivable and unimaginable. I don't understand how. Like there were some outstanding players that he was just letting rot away for no good reason and persisting with players that we knew were going to let us down. Bissouma, I could go through the entire squad that featured over the weekend and give them some praise. But to me, there are so many people that stand out. But Bissouma, he just looks like every time he wants to, he can get into another gear. And like there was a couple of times that when he drove the ball, it was like no one was able to keep with him at all. It was like he wanted to get to a certain point on the pitch and he was going to get there. There was that, I don't know if you saw his assist on international duty, where he was just toying with someone in the opposition box and then cut it back. And like, there was that, he drove into the box for us and he had that shot that was saved. And I just think he had a bit of a swagger about him where it was, he wasn't going to be stopped. And it was quite scary to see that he could just flick that switch. And where Conte just drained the life out of him and he was misplacing 10-yard passes. Like, and that comes from the man management side. He hasn't suddenly become a better footballer. He's been given the belief, he's been given the self-confidence from the manager to play in the way that he is and play in the way that he was playing at Brighton, which is why we signed him for a bargain. But...
Yeah,
they're literally every player that featured the weekend I could sing praises about. Maybe if I'm going to be very critical, I wasn't overly impressed with Solomon, but he was a free. I didn't think he played badly. I just think he was a little bit devoid of ideas at times. To where Perisic came on and had a little bit more of an impact here and there. Maybe if you're looking. That is now the position that we're looking to strengthen if we're considering Son to be our starting number nine. We've obviously said on the pod for a long time, I know that Cosmo's beat this drum for a few years, that Son's best position isn't out on the left. But I think that's obviously something that Ange needs to figure out, because I don't think that Solomon really is the answer for a long term. And obviously, Perisic isn't a long-term solution either.
Yeah, I think one of the benefits...
Is it possible
chance
we can go out there?
I think that's where he prefers to play, to be fair. But I think I think one of the positives of the fact that like we've all seen that we haven't been that impressed with Solomon. I mean, even the game where he got two assists against Burnley, like I was kind of slagging him off a bit in the chat, like before he got the assists, because he wasn't impressing me that much. But even the fact that we're not that impressed with him and we're still winning games sort of easily, even with this game where we come back late on, like still feels like you say, we were expected to come back. I think the fact that we can be almost like, maybe carrying's too harsh, but sort of like carrying a player that we don't feel is that good.
It's and not the still, level
yeah, and still creating like loads and loads of chances, that just shows how good the system is. Aaron, I just wanted to come back to one of the things you said on Bissouma and like the goal he scored on international duty, was literally running through my mind when he was running into the box, because it looked like it was going to be an exact carbon copy of what he did on international duty. And another thing I wanted to say was a very surreal moment when I went the wrong way out the stadium and I accidentally went all the way to the bottom floor and went out onto the Tottenham High Road. You're not allowed back in after that, I think. And as I came out onto Tottenham High Road, I saw the mural of Kane. And it was honestly very surreal seeing it, because it was just like, it was almost like Back to the Future vibe, like sort of going back to a timeline that you just don't recognise. And I just see that one of our own thing on our wall.
Parallel
like,
timeline.
Yeah, and it's just like, I was thinking like, why is that there? But just... I don't want to coat him off too much, because obviously he is like a club legend, but I just can't praise Ange enough for the fact that he's lost probably the best player of all time, arguably, for Spurs. And now we look at the mural and we're like, oh, who cares? Like, it's insane what he's done.
I think it is partially Ange, but I think some of the little comments that he's made here and there haven't really helped himself.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Let's paint over that mural. Like, I'll start a crowdfund to paint over that mural. Let's just honestly put anything on it. I don't care. Like, just literally put it back to what it was before. Just chip off all the paint and just have
just the wall there.
You just have bricks. I'd rather have. I'm sorry. It needs to go. It's horrible. I don't want that there anymore. I honestly don't want that there anymore. Like, on a sort of purple and gold vibe, I think we should just start a vigilante group. All of our listeners, come on, let's just go down there. Let's not demolish it, because it is on the wall of Brown Eagle, which is one of the best food establishments in Tottenham. Arguably one of the best food establishments in London. So let's respect that. But let's just throw a bunch of white paint over it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you won't hear it. You won't find many detractors for that idea. I just think that what Andy's done he's made it easy for us to not feel nostalgic, because with every manager that we've had since Poch's heyday, even towards the end of Poch's reign, we were nostalgic for Poch. We've been nostalgic of a previous era of Tottenham after Poch, and it was Jose and Conte and Nuno for a bit. We were nostalgic for the bombing fullbacks and the splitting the centre backs, and you know, and then we were nostalgic for Dele playing behind Kane, and then we were nostalgic for Eriksen feeding the ball to Dele and Kane, and then we were nostalgic for that Son and Kane partnership and
Toby and Jan.
Yeah, exactly. Toby and Jan and Dembele and even Wanyama. And what Ange's done he's made it easy for us to not feel nostalgic for that era and to be excited for a new Tottenham. And unlike all the managers that have come before him in recent time, you get the feeling that Ange is making a sustainable Tottenham, in terms of playing style, in terms of squad makeup, and in terms of the identity of the club and the mentality of the club. And he admits that he was frustrated about that cup exit, and he's going to learn on the job. He's not going to get it right all the time, but it feels really good to be like on a journey with Ange and be like, if he makes a mistake, he knows it's going to be a mistake, and we don't need to lambast him. We just go along on the ride with him.
Yeah, I agree. Aaron, I see you tapping the watch. I think it's time for a little break, and then we'll come back to part two. Hello and welcome back to part two. We're just going to jump straight into the North London derby. I think it's an interesting one in the sense that I do think in recent years, especially when we had Conte, I think there was a bit of belief that we were kind of more the established side until we weren't. But it definitely feels like a role reversal compared to, like, probably, I'd say, like, the last 4 years, probably, of playing Arsenal in the North London derby, where they have had a few years under Arteta now to get their feet under the table. They're an established side. They've paid a lot of money for the likes of Declan Rice. They should be going into this as favourites. The pressure's on them, really. Like, this season, they've got to go for the league, especially when you look at the money they've spent. So it's kind of odd going into it as, like, in the minds of most neutrals, like, strong underdogs. What do you guys make of our chances going into it?
I think it's finely poised. I think that compared to their explosiveness and near dominance of most of their games that they played last season, Arsenal, for one reason or another, have made some pretty significant changes to their tactical setup, and I'm not entirely sure why Arteta's done this. So apart from playing He Who Must Not Be Named every week, apart from recently, he's essentially done what obviously a lot of teams have done, including ourselves, and made their fullbacks a significant part of the build-up, even playing Partey at right back in order to accommodate this, and playing Ben White at centre back, something that just didn't seem like something that they needed to do, because last season they played with that flat back four with Zinchenko inverting sometimes, but it was extremely effective. I thought Ben White as a fullback didn't feel as much as a centre. You know, like normally when centre backs play at fullback, it's very obvious. It didn't feel like that at all. It felt like he slotted into that right back role really well, and it gave them that kind of ball winning dominance on the left, on the right, and he linked up quite well with Saka. And for some reason or another, they've changed that a lot this season to accommodate Havertz. And to me, it felt a lot like Arteta was kind of bending over backwards to justify the accommodation and purchase of Havertz, because his performances haven't justified it as of yet. And I think that's kind of the real significant difference. I also think that whereas last season, like I would have maybe said Odegaard would be the second player that I'd like want from Arsenal's team if it wasn't Saka. This season, his like influences on the game haven't been as significant. Again, because I think that the Arsenal squad or team is trying to accommodate Havertz in that team. And even yesterday with Fabio Vieira coming in instead of Havertz, he pretty much played as if Havertz would have played. There was no real influence on the game. And obviously, with Martinelli going off, that could be a significant disadvantage to Arsenal if his injury is even for like a couple of weeks. I did think that Zinchenko played really well, though, and I think that where his passing range could hurt us, the reason why I think it's finely poised in just this kind of flashpoint is that I think someone like Kulusevski can really, really exploit the space that Zinchenko leaves him behind, because Deki is so good on the transition. And when you have players like who can carry the ball or who can win the ball high up the pitch, and Zinchenko's one-on-one abilities are not very strong. And you could have Deki or you can have Johnson out there. I think they would cause him a lot of problems. And I think there's like a real fine balance between the players that Arsenal have going forwards and the players that we have going forward and their defenders and our midfield. I also think that it will be a case of our Arsenal going to believe that they can dominate that game. Historically, games away at Arsenal, we've not been good at. We've really, really not been good at, and we've been run over a lot of times. And it's whether they think that they can dominate that game, and whether we can exploit that, or whether we try to play our game, which is typically keeping the ball. And can we do that under pressure, significant pressure, which we haven't really faced this season, even though games like Brentford and United on paper are difficult. I said this 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. They don't press like Arsenal or Liverpool or even a Brighton. So I think it's finely poised, just because I think actually both teams are in very good nick. I just think that whereas Arsenal have a lot to give, they also have significantly more pressure to perform, whereas this is almost like a free hit for us because we are still in the we're still in transition. We're still trying to implement a brand new style of football, and that isn't to say if we get beat 4-0 then that's okay, that's not okay, and that will significantly hurt our confidence as a side, I would say. But I do think it is finally poised.
Yeah, I just think one of the things that popped into my mind when you were mentioning like the fact that they're trying to accommodate Havertz so much is the fact that our inverted fullbacks are going to be really crucial to the match, I think, because like it's essentially going to be Porro and Adogi going up against Havertz and Odegaard. And to be honest, I kind of fancy that duel. I think, especially Adogi, like, don't get me wrong, like, Odegaard is a world-class player. He's brilliant. But I do think with the physicality of Adogi, like, I do think we possibly have a slight advantage there. And then even when you flip that and look at them with Ben White and probably Zinchenko as their fullbacks, you know, Maddison is just on such a hot streak at the moment. I think he could do well. And then the physicality of Saar and the technical quality up against Zinchenko, starting to kind of like talk myself into us doing quite well here a little bit.
I would just say that I agree with that if those were the matchups, but I do think you have to think about how much their wingers hold their width in the team.
That's true, yeah.
When you think about it in that sense, the inverted fullbacks, in my opinion, are not going to be as tightly inverted. Much like I was trying to like say it like at Bournemouth with their wingers, I do think that... United as well, even. I do think that if we invert too tight, then we're just going to have Saka and whoever plays out on the left running at our centre-backs all game. And I really don't want Romero and Van de Ven backing into our box like for 90 minutes. I think they're good 1v1 defenders and they're strong in duels, but you won't be able to keep that up over 90 minutes. And I do think where in usual midfield battles, Porro or, in my opinion, Emerson, I think potentially can start this game. I think there is a very real chance that Emerson will start the game. It just depends on whether you want the defensive and technical security of Emerson compared to the technical prowess and passing range and creativity of Porro. I think that's almost like beyond the foot, like a defensive attacking. It's more like even a philosophical debate. What would you rather? Would you rather be on the front foot or would you rather be more secure? That's like one thing. But I also think that Maddison and Saar, if those are going to be the two eights playing alongside Bissouma, because barring any injuries, touch wood, that's going to be your starting midfield. I think Maddison and Saar are going to be doing a lot of work on those players, of whether it be Havertz, Fabio Vieira and Odegaard. Just because you can't have those fullbacks doing two jobs. It's too physically taxing and it's too easy to play around because if that's the case, you're just going to have triangles between Zinchenko and whoever's playing their eight and their winger, or on the other side, you're just going to have Rice, Ben White, Saka. It's easy to play around that kind of press. So I think having a week to prepare for this is going to be hugely, hugely beneficial to us, because we have to figure out how you're going to defend against their wingers, especially if Martinelli is also fit alongside Saka, because they hold that width as good as any wingers in the Premier League.
Yeah, like maybe this is quite proper football man of me, but like when I literally do compare the players like man for man, it's such a fascinating matchup. Like even if you just look at like the defensive midfielder versus the defensive midfielder, I think Rice has been great for Arsenal since he's gone in, and he is a great player. Like he was fantastic for West Ham, but then like Bissouma for us has been fantastic. This is the thing. Like it's more finely poised than I think we probably give ourselves credit for, because I think like as Spurs fans we're always kind of trying to protect ourselves a little bit, but you know, I didn't even think I was going to be saying this like going into the podcast, but like we do have a really good team, and I do actually think we can go toe to toe with them. My worry is that because it's such a new team, we are so wet behind the ears. It could go really wrong because, like I said earlier, like Arteta's had over 4 years, I think, with the squad, and he's been allowed to bring in loads and loads of players, and just literally had to sell his third choice centre back after the transfer window, and trust the kid. So, like, in terms of like the back in for the two of them, it's incomparable. But you know, we started the season so well. I think the first 11 are great. And yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. Aaron, what do you think?
So prior to us talking about it now, I was really, really of the mindset of like, we don't win away at Arsenal at all. So I'd kind of like almost accepted it, even though I'm known as the optimistic Spurs fan here, but I'd really, really accepted it. And we've only won there twice in the Premier League era. And as we know, football didn't exist prior to the Premier League. So those are the only two. We've only won there twice.
I was just thinking that can't be right. But then I do remember growing up, it was always like Tottenham haven't won at Arsenal since 1990, whatever. So
now it's since 2010. Shout out Younes Kabul.
13 years ago.
But I will admit that since we've been thinking about it a little bit more deeply than I had given it the time to before, you were absolutely right. But in the fact that our squad is our first 11 and our subs are good, and obviously they've got their midweek game as well. We have got the whole week. We aren't supposed to win this game, and maybe that plays into our hands, whereas there is a little bit more pressure on them. They're expected to challenge for the title. Where I know, obviously, as you go through the season, I'm a firm believer that your expectations of your aspirations should change throughout the season. And obviously, we have started unbeaten, but I still think that it is not expected of us to challenge for the title. Whereas I think Arsenal have been put forward, because obviously of their big push last year, that they are the ones that are meant to be challenging City. And if you're not winning the majority of your home games, they're never going to be able to do that. And obviously City are on 100% record so far. And if they're going to keep up, they've got to be winning their home games. And I think that we need to go in with the mindset of, yes, we've had this whole week. Everyone's going to know their role. We're going to have been sat down watching a bit of tape, seeing about how we're going to exploit them. And I think, I don't know if I've watched a couple of Arsenal games, because unfortunately my partner is an Arsenal fan, and the compromise that we have is that we will watch each other's games.
It's really unfortunate.
I don't know how you do that.
It's really, really tough. And if anyone out there listening is in a similar situation as myself, then I think we need to start some sort of club, because it is really, really tough. We do need to support each other. But I have watched quite a few of their games, and Zinchenko's been doing this weird thing where he's sort of he's almost moving to the right hand side of Rice. And it just means that he's got to get so far back. And I think that if I'm spotting that, and I know that other people have spoken about it as well, it's probably been spoken about in commentary, that's got to be something that we need to look at. And I do think the physicality that we mentioned earlier on, because it's not just that our players are more physical, they are technically good as well. But when you're going up against someone who physically wants it more from you, it can make your day very, very difficult. And I just think that man for man, we aren't a million miles behind them, if behind them at all. When you mentioned Martinelli, he was at the Arsenal training ground earlier on today, because my partner works near the training ground, and she saw him driving home. So he was in, but we obviously don't know the extent of his injury at all.
Scan and a 6-month injury. That's what I want.
But yeah, I see this weekend as it'll be a real barometer. A barometer? Is that the right way? A measuring stick of where we are. Yeah. And if we put in a really positive performance, not saying necessarily a win, but if we are at their level, then that will tell us a lot.
By the way, this is like slightly off topic, but you know, we've been pitting the 11s against each other. Arteta's interview after the Everton game.
Oh my God. Oh.
He is so unpleasant. Not only is he unpleasant.
He's reaching Klopp levels.
I think he's far beneath any Klopp level. He's fucking awful. Like, he's just a prick. Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, yeah, I mean, as if saying that thing about conquering his wife wasn't bad enough. And
that was odd. Yeah. It was odd.
But, like, he was in, like, a completely normal interview, and then they were asking him, so is Raya your number one now? And he just starts saying, like, oh, name, what number is Fabio Vieira? And it's not just what he's saying. What he's saying makes it bad enough, but it's the fact that he has psychopath eyes. There's no warmth behind his eyes whatsoever. He's perfect for Arsenal, by the way. He's perfect. they love him, which I think says a lot about anyone's moral characteristics who supports Arsenal.
He's got that aura.
What? Aura of fucking...
Of a psycho killer.
Yeah, name a serial killer, I don't know, but... he's just awful. And then you compare it to Ange, and it's night and day. It almost feels like going into this game is good versus evil, I want to say, Eddie.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I do think that the neutrals for once will be behind Tottenham. It is weird to say that considering I just saw a clip of Jamie Vardy talking about Tottenham, just like basically slagging off Spurs at a music festival. I'm like, mate, you're 35 playing in the Championship. You need to put it down. I don't know what it is about Spurs that irks people. I think we've spoken about it on the pod before. It definitely feels that, like, people think that we've not earned our spot where we are, and that we're able to challenge and that we're able to cause upsets. And I think that now with Ange, people are like, apart from, I'd literally say apart from Arsenal, they want to discredit our progress so badly. They want it to be a flash in the pan. But if it weren't for Arsenal being the team that we're playing against on the weekend, most neutrals would be like, oh yeah, can't wait for Spurs to lose and for that bubble to burst. And I think that the great thing about Ange, and the great thing that is so different compared to previous managers that we've had before, is that I think a lesser manager makes it, yeah, we've got our backs against the wall, you know, everyone hates us, we should play into that, and to play into that kind of tribalism. And we do it as fans, like, and I don't think we're any less of fans for doing that. But as a coach, you need to be better than that. You need to take that kind of energy and be like, we just need to play our football. People will come round, they won't come round, that shouldn't bother us at all. Like, and going into the game, I'm sure at the back of Arteta's minds, he's going to be saying to his players, like, we're better than this team. We beat them so many times at home. We absolutely trounced them last season. We just go out and do it again. And that's not the case. And I think that it would be at Arsenal's peril, because I've seen the fans doing it already, to say, oh yeah, Spurs play with this 2-3-5 build-up. We're going to absolutely slaughter them at home. I've seen that so much already. And I just think that it's really, really, you know, underestimate us at your peril, I think, because it's not just that we've got a week to prepare. It's not just that we've started well. It's the fact that every single point that we've earned this season, you're building strength after strength, strength after strength. The Bournemouth game. Sorry, the Brentford game, first game of the season, even had the odd caveat of like there being issues with water at the stadium.
Oh, sanitation problems.
And you leave Brentford a notoriously difficult game over the last two seasons with a point away from home after going down. That's one building block. Then you go and you play Man United and you beat them comfortably. That's another building block. Then you beat Bournemouth. Again, you just build another a building block, a better performance. And then you absolutely smash Burnley. And that just breeds confidence. And you're building and you see building blocks and you're seeing players grow in front of your eyes in terms of Saar and Adogi and Bissouma, Madison, Van de Ven. You're just breeding confidence. And the game on the weekend against, albeit Sheffield, you're down 1-0 in the 95th minute. And by the 102nd minute, you're 2-1 up. And you can't tell me that that doesn't breed way more confidence than scraping through game after game that Arsenal has been doing in the first five games that they've had. They haven't been poor by any stretch of the imagination. And in fact, I'm sure that United game was equally as, you know, uplifting as any other game we've played. But you can't tell me that that game at Sheffield won't fill that team with so much confidence ahead of North London Derby. I think really it's kind of almost the perfect time to play and poises it so perfectly for us.
That's one of the things that I wanted to like mention about them, because I have watched quite a few games of Arsenal this season, and they almost look like, they kind of look like how you want to end a season in terms of you want to be kind of like seeing out games and not playing that well. But they've been doing that since the start. And as a Spurs fan, I did say this to an Arsenal fan, but I don't know how well it came across because our recent experiences with like Conte and Mourinho, but like we've started a lot of seasons, even going as far back to AVB and especially last season, where like we went into this exact same fixture probably at the exact same time last season. We were unbeaten, but we knew we were playing shit. And Arsenal, they haven't been as bad as that. Let's be fair to them. They do still look like a really good team, especially in the first half against Everton. I thought they absolutely like played them off the park. But they haven't been winning games convincingly at all. Again, though, there's just a thing in the back of my mind where it's just like, we're such a young, like, fresh team. I don't know if it's almost like trying to protect myself a little bit, but I don't want to say like, oh, we're going to go there and get something. But look, it's Arsenal and then it's Liverpool at home. If we can get through that, even with 2 points, I think we're in for a very special season.
I do want to say that you go into every game with the, like, there is, in my opinion, there is no point in watching football if you don't go into every game hoping that you can win, thinking that you can get something against anyone. It doesn't matter if you support Tottenham, Arsenal, Sheffield, whoever you support. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter who you support. You have to go into that game thinking there's a chance we can do something. Because if we go into the game against Arsenal and be like, there's no chance, there's honestly no point turning on the television or going to the game. Because that belief, like, it infects your viewing and you can feel it on the pitch. And like, if the players don't believe it, then like Aaron said, if someone on the Arsenal team or your any opponent, if they want it more, it's physically and mentally they want it more, then they will do you. It is just your Yadav's football at the end of the day. Like, you can talk about football and how it's evolved over the last, even in the Premier League era, even in the last 5 years, you can talk about how much football has evolved. But there is that, whatever, if football, 90% of football has evolved, there's still that 10% of, if you want it on the day, then you'll get it. If you want it more than your opponent, even 5% more, 10% more, then you'll get something out of the game that they won't be able to reach in and find themselves. And I think that what Ange has been doing, and it's very evident in the like the things that the players have said pre and post game, is that he's equipping the players to play for each other, to hold each other accountable, and to be confident that if we continue to play the football that we're working on, then the results will come. And I think if that's the mentality that we're approaching the game from, then like Aaron said, if we put in a good performance, which is what we've been saying from the beginning, then regardless of the result, we're still going, we're still moving forward. Whereas for Arsenal, a poor result is a step backwards from last season. And I think that's the difference. That's why I think that it is like going to be such an interesting game to watch. But obviously, you get to kick off and you're just like, let's go out, go in and absolutely smash them.
Who wants that first tackle?
I'm interested to hear where you guys are going to be watching the game, especially you, Aaron, with the moral dilemma that you mentioned earlier with the fact that your girlfriend supports Arsenal. How are you handling that one?
It won't be together. It won't be together.
Yeah, that's so fair. You can't. That's just too tumultuous.
No, it's just depending on the result, we may not even talk about it. But it's it won't be in the same building for sure.
Where are you going to go instead, then?
I think the more likely scenario is that she'll go to her parents' house, and I'll keep home turf.
Oh, result. That's not bad. Eddie, what about you?
I don't know. I haven't seen any football outside the Casa this season, apart from when I was on holiday. So it might be the one to get out and about. Just because obviously I'm like feeling better, like recovery is going well. So I think it's one of those ones where I want to experience it with other people, especially if whatever the result, but I think it'll be better when you're with other people.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, I have a situation that isn't too dissimilar from Aaron's, where my whole girlfriend's family supports Arsenal, and I think I'm going to a family barbecue on that day, and they were like, "Oh, we're gonna like project the game," and I'm gonna be the only Spurs fan there.
Astral project out of there.
It just doesn't sound like a good idea. I really don't think I should do it.
If you want to airdrop me into that situation, I'll come with
moral support.
Yeah.
It's like you say, Aaron, I just don't think there's any good outcome out of that. Because if Spurs win, I can't really rub it in kind of thing. But saying that, they will know. They will know. I don't have to say anything. I can just sit there smug. I can just be like, oh, it's just a game.
That's almost better.
I think that's got to be the game plan. We've got to trust Big Ange, and then I can just play it smug.
I think that's
got to be the way.
My dad being a City supporter, he's gonna be supporting Tottenham. And my brother, as much as he hates Tottenham, he hates Arsenal more. So I think home turf is going to be safe for me.
Yeah, it's got to be done. But yeah, I mean, looking ahead slightly to Liverpool as well, like these are two quite cursed fixtures. Eddie, you're always the first to tell us that. Like, I don't know. I'll give the scenario again, because I did this a few pods ago when I said, like, if we do win these winnable fixtures, then where are we going to be at? How are people going to be talking about us? Let's be realistic. Like, we're not going to win both of them, but we could. But let's say we get two draws out of these. How will the expectations for the rest of the season look?
Well, you're going to get me sounding more like Aaron if we get 2 points out of those 2 games. God, I hate talking about fixture against Liverpool. So cursed, and my sleep paralysis demon manages Liverpool. So
no one hates Klopp more than Eddie, but for the listeners at home.
Well, I mean, we'll pod before the Liverpool game, so I air my feelings out then. But yeah, I think that first of all, we need to ban this term where every game's a cup final. I hate that term. I don't want it to be used. But with that said, every
you're going to say it anyway.
Yeah, every game like this where this is Ange's first fixture of this kind of nature, like the Liverpool, the Chelsea, the Arsenal. We historically can get up for those games at home. That's always been something that we can do. But I think what Ange needs to do is also get the players into the mindset that these games are as important as every other crunch fixture in the season. We need to approach it not with an underdog's mentality, but with the mentality that we can go and win. And not to get ahead of myself, but like, if you were to say, who would you rather play, Arsenal or Liverpool? I'd pick Liverpool every day of the week based on the way they've been playing this season. I know they've looked stronger as the weeks have gone by, but defensively, I think we can absolutely get at them. Absolutely. And I think that we need to look at this season like with fresh eyes, not with the PTSD of previous seasons, because I'm sure that's Ange's looking at these fixtures with fresh eyes. Like, how can we improve? How can we approach this differently to what didn't work before? And I think it all starts with a mental change for those games. So I want to go into those games with confidence that we can actually do something. But I'll never say that to anyone else.
Aaron, what's your closing thoughts on the derby?
On the derby, I think that my main point is positive. We want a positive performance, and it is a free hit. And it's going to be a big measuring stick, as I mentioned earlier on. Those are my closing thoughts. I know confidence is high, and I don't think we could be going into the game asking for much more from our previous fixtures. And I think that we're in as good a position as any to give them everything that we can.
Hear, hear. I think that's a good place to end it. Yeah, been a pleasure as always. Thanks for joining me, Aaron.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
And thanks for joining me, Eddie.
As always, mate, I'll always be there. I'm a constant.
As always, Mr. Reliable. Mr. Tottenham, arguably.
Oh, you're too kind. You're too kind.
And yeah, that's been the N17 pod. Thank you for listening. If you've made it to here, then give us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and drop us a follow on socials at N17 Pod. Thank you for listening.
We out.